welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 224 of the podcast, and it's 5th of July 2015 as I record this. So today we have a great interview with Jeffrey Kafer about audiobook marketing tips. And if you don't have your books in audiobook format yet, I hope this interview further inspires you. As you know, if you listen regularly, how enthusiastic I am about audiobooks and how very cool it is to have an extra stream of income. I also include at the end an excerpt of Jeff narrating my first male voice audiobook, One Day in New York, which is written from Jake's perspective. It's another arcane action adventure, obviously set in New York, but sort of from Jake's point of view. So it's really very awesome to hear my words and my story, stuff that came from my head, read by an American man. I mean, audio narration is always wonderful because it takes things that were just in your head and kind of you hear them spoken by somebody else. But to hear it in a man's voice is just a little bit weird because, of course, the voice in my head is always female, even when I'm writing a man. Anyway, you know what that means. But stick around at the end of the show for just a few minutes of Jeff narrating, and I could listen to him for hours. He's got a lovely voice. His narration voice is slightly different to his interview voice as well. So I hope you'll find that interesting. So in publishing news this week, there's still lots of freaking out about the KDP Select new system of paying by page read. And I only have my translations in Select, so I do have this new graph on my KDP backend reporting screen. And yes, it is kind of confusing, but I don't really, you know, I don't make the bulk of my, well, I make barely any income from KDP Select, basically. So it's not really something that's impacting me now. I understand lots of people do have it, but I think, you know, even if that sense, even if that sort of thing gets rolled out in a wider way, it still doesn't worry me. I think it's the pages read thing is actually really interesting. And what I'd like them to do is actually share where people stop reading. That would be amazing. And it's a good reminder to focus on the ideal reader with your books. And obviously keeping them turning the pages doesn't mean explosions on every page. It means getting people to, you know, if you're writing nonfiction, it's answering the right questions without padding. For fiction, it's actually making people care enough about the characters or, you know, what's going on that they actually want to find out what happens, whether it is action adventure with explosions or literary fiction with, you know, really detailed stuff about characters and setting and things. You know, you want to write your best books and keep offering them to readers. And if you're worried about this, please don't be, you know, this is not going to be the last change. This hasn't been the first change. It certainly won't be the last. There will always be people, you know, regardless of the technological changes, there will always be people who want inspiration, education and entertainment. And you can be one of those offering it. So please don't be too concerned about all the freakouts. Just keep writing your books. Okay, so on to personal and writing stuff. So I've actually had pretty difficult couple of weeks in terms of tech gremlins and health gremlins. I've got really bad RSI in my wrist, in my elbow, and now kind of my shoulder as I try and do things to fix it. I've actually got right now this handshake mouse, which changes the position of the wrist. So I'm trying to fix all of that because obviously as writers, it's very important that we can write. I know many of you will understand the RSI and the various health issues that writers have. You know, it definitely stems from very intense writing period I had before I went to Croatia. And then, of course, I was on a bike and sometimes the off-road kind of thing. So I didn't really give my elbow a rest. But anyway, that's the kind of personal gremlin, and then tech gremlins. I've just had a mare. I upgraded to Yosemite. You know, I love Mac. I mean, I absolutely love Mac, but this Yosemite didn't really work very well with my eCam recorder for Skype, which is how I do the podcasts. So I've been having a complete nightmare. And so I have to apologize now for the sound quality in parts of the next few interviews, as I've kind of had to cobble together things from backup recorders, which I've had in the room so I didn't lose the audio. But you know, you listen to my show for content, and that continues. So hopefully I have it sorted out now. I've reinstalled and done all kinds of things. Hopefully that will come good soon. I've also had some shutdowns on my website, and it's been one of those techie months. I think I have to sacrifice to the tech gods or something. But other than that, How to Make a Living with Your Writing is out on all ebook stores and it's selling well. Thank you so much if you've bought that. I hope you're finding it useful and coming soon in print, just getting that formatted at the moment. You can find that again on all online stores. And also Deviance, London Psychic Book 3, which will probably just be the end of it, as in I've really round up the trilogy. It's out for pre-order on Amazon, Kobo and iBooks at a reduced price of $2.99 for the pre-order period, and then it will go up to $4.99. So if you want to try Deviance, and it is a standalone, or you can check out the other books in the series, get it on pre-order before 31st of July. Okay, so this week I'm off to Thriller Fest, which I'm very excited about in New York. I really love going to Thriller Fest because I feel like the bottom of the heap, and that might sound odd, but I really enjoy learning from other people and other authors who've been doing this for years. So I get to sit in the room with people who've written, you know, so many books, have been, you know, potentially writing books for 40 years. And that to me is really exciting because I am 40 and I'm often one of the youngest people there. So, you know, there's a group of people obviously in their 30s and 40s, but the most of the big names and the people who are speaking are older people in their 50s, 60s and older than that. So I actually really like that because it reminds me that most successful authors really hit their stride after years of honing the craft, and also that the money really starts to kick in when you have a decent backlist. And you know, many of these people in their 50s and 60s are doing incredibly well, and it's not because their latest book has, you know, hit the New York Times list, although it might have done. It's not so much about the latest book, it's about the years worth of work they have behind them. So that's what I get encouraged about. I'll also be visiting the Morbid Anatomy Museum, which I helped fund on Kickstarter, and I'm excited to see that. I really like the Morbid Anatomy blog, and I also have some other artist state things planned. I will most likely go back to the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, and I really like the Guggenheim, so I'm going to have some nice days out as well. Always good to fill the creative well as such, and it will give my elbow a rest so that's quite handy too. Yes, and there might be a few gin and tonics along the way, so watch out for pictures, tweeting and Facebook posts this week from Thriller Fest. Okay, couple of reminders of value-added stuff that hopefully you will benefit from. The amazing self-publishing summit, which yes, I'm speaking at, but lots of other very exciting speakers. And it's free if you listen live or in the first 72 hours. So you've got 3 days to listen to each session, or it's $97 to get access to all the replays, which is what I'm doing. So go to thecreativepen.com/summit. That runs July 12th to 23rd of July 2015. If you're listening after that, it's possibly still there as recordings to purchase. Some of the sessions I am particularly looking forward to. Charlie Hone is doing a session on behind the scenes of the most successful book launches of the decade. Lessons from working with Tim Ferriss, Seth Godin, Tucker Max and Ramit Sethi. So I'm really looking forward to that because those book launches were very, very good. Yes, they're all non-fiction, but I really think that you can learn a lot from Charlie. And also Steve Scott's doing How to Build an Author Platform and Make 20 to 50 grand a month from books and ebooks. I'm talking about how I've written 16 books and how I've speeded up my process from 14 months to around 3 months. Ryan Levesque is doing How to Self-Publish Your Way to a Number One on the Amazon and USA Today National Bestseller List. So that will be interesting. Plus like tons more. And get just back on the nonfiction thing, I have had an email that said, is the summit relevant for fiction authors? And I do think that most marketing can be applied to fiction and nonfiction alike, but also that fiction authors should consider adding nonfiction to their repertoire as a hedge against the ups and downs of fiction trends. I certainly find that my income for fiction, is much more unstable than my nonfiction income. So to me, I really like having both. And so remember about the summit, you can listen free, live, or within 72 hours, or you can get an all access pass for $97. Go to thecreativepen.com/summit. Another little reminder is I'm hosting a webinar with Nick Stevenson on Thursday, 16th of July, on how to find your first 10,000 readers. And I know many of you have probably done Nick's free video series, but we'll be going into lots more depth in this 90-minute webinar. And Nick's advice has certainly helped me. And, there are not too many people who I really listen to, and Nick is one of them because he's come out of marketing and he's very focused. Now, I've built a very wide platform. My interests range across many different things. So, but Nick has been very focused on email lists and reader magnets, and focus is something I'm trying to cultivate. So you can join us on the webinar. Go to thecreativepen.com/10K webinar. That's the number 10. K webinar to register for your free place. And yes, if you register, you can get the recording as well. Okay. Here is our new regular segment, which is what are you doing while listening to the show? And I'm saving all the tweets on Twitter, the Creative Pen, and you can click on favorites and you can see all the pictures and tweets and things, which is cool. So Stephen Weber says, listening to your podcast the other day while harvesting lavender. We have a small lavender farm off-grid property in the hills of Northern California. That's very cool. AJ Roberts is driving home from AC/DC, listening to the podcast. Clearly my ears can't cope with more rock and I need a nice lady talking books. A nice lady. You know, part of me is happy to be called a nice lady because I think, Joanna Penn and the Creative Penn, I am a nice lady. But, if you need to be reminded that I'm not all that nice, please go read my fiction. By J.F. Penn is not quite as nice as Joanna Penn. And then we've got a tweet from Naima. I hope that's how you say it, Naima or Naima. Listening in Ankara in Turkey while making breakfast, then on my walk. Love your giggles. And she sent a picture of the sunrise over Ankara skyline, which is awesome. I love Turkey, actually. I really, really enjoy Turkey. Cappadocia, I was there a long time ago, and the south coast there. Ephesus, brilliant place. And of course, Istanbul and Ankara. I've never been to Ankara, Naima, but you never know. Robert Scott Norton says he always listens on the drive home. Best way to psych me up to get my words done for the day. You always boost my morale. I'm glad to hear that, Robert. Thank you so much. And actually, I would also say thank you to all you guys for listening. You help me just by being there. I do feel accountable to my listeners, and that helps me. I know I have to tell you when I'm writing, and it's really excellent. Nathan Munier, who's been on the show, says he's listening while cooking dinner for the missus and enjoying a much needed pint. Pete Bauer says he's listening in beautiful Virginia on vacation. And thank you for the lovely picture, Pete. Vicky Charles sent a rather amusing picture of her eating an ice lolly. She's listening to the podcast while waiting for her own to upload for editing. Yes, those sitting around editing things is always fun. Wendy Ledger says, I'm so inspired by your podcast. I listen while I'm walking among the redwoods around my home in Ben Lomond. That sounds gorgeous, Wendy. Please send a picture. Christopher Raymond says he's listening to the podcast on mindset while formatting episode one of Arcanum Island going live tonight. It sounds like a format, either it's an ebook or maybe an podcast as well. Cool, Christopher. Oh, and just a little, Anthony tweeted me and said he just discovered my Arcane series a week and a half ago and has read them all, and says, I hope you're not done telling Morgan and Jake stories. Loving them. Thank you, Anthony. And yes, although I have been focusing on Deviants and finishing the London Psychic series, I am getting back to, I'll be doing another Arcane, possibly another two by the end of the year. So the next Arcane book will be Destroyer of Worlds, which I'm pretty clear on what's happening. The opening scene is already in my head and it's cool. So yeah, that will definitely be happening. Just slurping my tea there. Okay, yes. So you can tweet me at The Creative Pen, or you can email Joanna at The Creative Pen. Let me know where and where you're listening or what you're doing. And yeah, super fun. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. And coming up soon is a word from our sponsor. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And thanks in particular this week to new Patreon supporter Tim Adler. So on Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars, even $1 per show, to a maximum of two shows a month, because I set Patreon up before I went to a month to a weekly show. So less than a coffee a month. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books. Thank you. And here's a word from our sponsor.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Christina Potter, content specialist for Kobo Writing Life. We here at Writing Life are very excited about sponsoring the Creative Pen podcast and the chance to share this amazing resource for writers. I get the opportunity to connect with indie authors and publishers every day and help them load their content and sell books around the world. I encourage authors to have a look at the many opportunities through Writing Life to generate buzz about their books. One great way to do this is to enable your title for pre-order, which you can do by selecting a future activation date in the Writing Life portal. Check out other great tips on the Writing Life blog at kobowritinglife.com. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Creative Pen podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Jeffrey Kafer. Hi Jeff.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. So just a little introduction. So Jeffrey is a professional audiobook narrator and award-winning voiceover artist. And he recently narrated my first male character audiobook, One Day in New York. And he also runs the audiobook promotion site, Audiobook Blast. So Jeff, tell us just a bit more about you and your background, as well as how you got into audio.
Well, I started in the theater back when I was just a wee lad. I will not try to do a British accent on here. And I grew up in the theater, and I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid. Fate turns me more towards the tech side, and I worked for Microsoft for 15 years, and now I'm back to being an actor. So it's kind of funny how these things sometimes come full circle. I live in Los Angeles with my family and my dog, and I, as you said, I do audiobooks and other voiceover work pretty much all day every day,
which is very cool. And it's funny because I'm now listening to you and I'm hearing the audiobook you just did for me, and it's quite weird. So yeah, so nice. I can hear you in, I'm like, it's Jake.
Oh good, I like that.
Which is cool. But so you first came on the show in 2009 when I had just got started with the podcast, which is crazy. Right. And they were still selling CDs in stores. So what has changed in the audiobook market in the last few years, and why is now a good time for authors to do audiobooks?
Well, last time I talked to you, it was pre-ACX, I believe. Mm. So ACX is kind of the biggest, well, in terms of distribution, CDs are going downhill in terms of sales. The numbers are going down. And the digital downloads are going up. Now, that includes things like libraries as well as Audible. There's been huge growth in the library rental space. Rental's not the right word, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect. As well as ACX now allows any author in the US and I think the UK to create audiobooks. As most authors know, you can go to ACX and you can pair up yourself with a narrator who's willing to take on your project. So, I mean, it's been right now, it's easier than ever before to actually get an audiobook made. And there's more channels for distribution, than ever before. So, you know, it's another stream of income. It's kind of like putting your book out on Kindle. And then also making sure you have it out on Kobo and Nook. It's another platform, really. It's a big platform. Don't treat it just as a stream of income because you've got a narrator on the other side who, if it's a royalty share deal, may be reliant on the income. So it's not. It shouldn't be a passive income stream, but it is another way to make money and to ignore it. I wouldn't ignore it.
No, neither would I. And of course, with people being used to using their cell phones now, their smartphones to download audio and streaming audio, you know, speed, I guess, that's really been a game changer.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's sort of the misconception that these are for visually disabled people. And that's certainly an aspect. That's one market. That's not the only market. I mean, when I was commuting to Microsoft, I was listening to hundreds of books. I listen to hundreds and hundreds of audiobooks. So as people's commutes get longer, traffic gets worse, they need something to do while they're driving to work or while they're gardening or while they're doing a craft or, you know, whatever. It's not just for the visually disabled anymore.
ACX is now for US and UK authors at the moment. And obviously one of the cons with that is it's not for authors in any other country who are listening. But what are the real pros and cons that you see of using the ACX model?
Access is the big plus. Never before have you been able to go up there as an author and post your book and let auditions come in. But that pro is also a con in that everybody's doing it. So if you're only interested in a royalty share deal, you're going to be competing with 3,000 other books that are sitting up there hoping that a narrator will audition. So the accessibility is a pro and everybody else realizing the same thing is the con.
And what about, I mean, you know, in that way also, we haven't been able to do an easy way of doing royalty share. So, you know, you and I don't have to, you know, as joint rights holders now of One Day in New York, we don't have to pay each other. The money goes through ACX. So to me, that's amazing because when I do, when I work with a translator, example, I have to get the royalties and then distribute them. So to to me, it's like this, the actual distribution of the money to two separate artists who may not even ever speak. We're only speaking because we're on the podcast. We didn't speak in production. So, you know, that to me is a real pro in that I don't have to manage the money as well.
Correct. Yes, that is true. That's a little less true if you're doing a per finished hour, a pay for production. In other words, you pay me, Audible doesn't pay me. But in terms of the monthly royalties, yeah, it's really convenient that Audible just takes care of that. For everybody concerned.
Yeah. And if authors want to have their book stand out, say they want to do a royalty share, mainly if they want to do a royalty share, how do they get the attention of a narrator like yourself, like the good narrators?
Well, the first thing you can do is have a really, really good cover. If you have a really, really good cover, you'll get some attention. The other thing is to put in your description how many units you're selling. I know that's private information. People hold that pretty close to the vest. But if you're expecting somebody to invest time, which means money, into your book, you need to be upfront with your potential partner as to how many units you're actually selling. Now, selling, not the free downloads, not you didn't put your book up for perma-free. I got 100,000 downloads. Okay, that's cool, but anybody will download something if it's free. I understand why authors do that, and that's cool, but the free downloads don't necessarily translate into audiobook sales. A much better number is how many people are actually paying money for your book. Any reviews you've gotten, if you've been listed in, you know, if you're a New York Times bestseller, that's pretty good. What your marketing plan is, are you going to be doing BookBub ads? That sort of thing. Narrators like to see that you are putting your money where your mouth is, and they understand that you can't necessarily do a royalty share deal, but they want you to have some skin in the game, because if a narrator takes on your 10-hour book, that's 40 hours of work for them. So they need to know that you're just as serious about the investment as they are, and don't look at it as just another passive income stream. So really selling your book in the description in terms of numbers and figures, not how great you think your book is, not how wonderful it is, but hard, cold numbers and facts in your description is the best thing you can do to attract a narrator.
Which is interesting. So when you shop or you get notified of books, I mean, do you actually, as the narrator, do you go into ACX and look within a genre? How do you look for books? Like you mentioned the cover, do you just scan through the latest things that are there? Or,
well, I'm a little different in that I don't do a lot of straight royalty share deals unless it's from an author that I know. But the first thing that an author will First thing a narrator will do is look at the per finished hour ones, because everybody wants to get paid first. Okay. So there's nothing there. Then they'll switch over to the stipend ones. excuse me. And that's the second choice, because that's at least $100 a finished hour. And the straight royalty share is the last thing they look at. And I think the default sorting on ACX is by posting date. So, you know, the ones that are latest pop up to the top. And I think that's how people generally go through ACX.
So you mentioned BookBub there, which is interesting, because I did a BookBub recently for Stone of Fire and noticed we got 115 audiobook sales on the day of BookBub. And it was a perma-free. And I thought, oh, that's great. But there's something now with the matching, isn't there, that's not necessarily so great. So tell us about that.
A caveat to what I said before about don't necessarily count perma-free is if you do a BookBub and you give your book away, people will still buy the audiobook, which is an odd phenomenon, sort of, but not really when you think about it, because the audiobook listener is very different, is a completely different animal. Audiobook listeners, and this was true of me when I was listening to audiobooks, I wanted to listen to the audiobook. I don't want the ebook. Because I don't have time to sit and read. My commute is my reading time, quote unquote, reading time. So really what's happening, what you're seeing happen is the book is just getting eyeballs to Amazon. And then people are saying, oh, this looks interesting. I'm going to grab the audiobook. I have a credit from Audible. I'm just going to grab the audiobook version. I don't care. The ebook is free. I'll never read the ebook, but the audiobook sounds really cool. So I'm going to grab it. That's what you're seeing. You're just, in this case, a BookBub ad is just getting eyeballs to your Amazon listing. And people are buying the audiobook because that's their preferred format.
But I think people are watching the BookBub ads as audiobook listeners anyway, because if once you own the ebook, you get the audiobook as bundled for a much cheaper price.
Oh, the Whisper Sync, yeah.
Yeah, so that I mean, it's a much lower sale, but it's still, you know, for example, if we get them in on book one, they might make it all the way to book seven.
Right, that is true, that is true. Now, keep in mind, the Whisper Sync is a great deal for you as an author. It's not such a great deal for the narrator. Because remember, we don't get a piece of the ebook sale. we only get a piece of the $1.99 Whisper Sync sale. So if it's, you know, we get 40% of $1.99, that's what, 60 cents?
Yeah. So why don't more narrators like break Whisper Sync on purpose?
Authors have tried to break Whisper Sync, and eventually they figure out ways so that you can't break Whisper Sync. Narrators don't want to break Whisper Sync because it's not our job. Our job is to actually follow the text 100%. And we know authors like Whisper Sync. It's a betting on the long-term game. If we get 100 sales or 150 sales of a Whisper Sync, that level of volume is pretty good. So it's a numbers game. It's a volume game when we talk about Whisper Sync.
And we should probably explain, do you want to just explain what Whisper Sync is in case
anyone doesn't know? Whisper Sync is the, if you buy the ebook, you can get the audiobook for $1.99 or more sometimes. And the cool thing about that is that they will stay in sync. Where you leave off reading in your Kindle, your audiobook will pick up the next day or whenever, where you left off, and vice versa. So you can basically stay in sync, hence the term Whisper Sync, between your ebook and audiobook. I know a lot of people who love shopping for Whisper Sync deals, because you get two things for, you know, $3. I mean, that's a latte.
I know. That's crazy. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and they can have you read to them for hours, which is...
Yeah. Well, that may be punishment. I don't know.
No, you've got a great voice. And I also wanted to ask about foreign language, because I've put up a couple of, I've put up some German books, German and a Spanish, and that just hasn't really worked. What has the, you know, because, I mean, there has been some people interested in, but the foreign language audiobook thing on ACX doesn't seem that big yet. Would that be your impression, or do you think it's changing?
It's certainly growing. I mean, right now there are specific German and, I don't even know what other foreign languages there are that have specific Audible sites. I know there's Germany, UK, which isn't a foreign language, but it's not US. Technology is ringing over here.
We're just technology. Fantastic.
You know, foreign markets are growing. It's not a market that I would necessarily try to tap into now. Mm-hmm. I would not release a German-only audiobook, just because the market is so... You know, it's hard enough to do a U.S. or an English book and get decent sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a struggle in itself. I would not count on a German-only book, as I guess you discovered as well.
Oh, absolutely. And in the end, if they've sat up there, I think for 2 months without anybody auditioning, they just kind of say, okay, no one's interested, and they kind of archive your project. So,
right.
Yeah, that's happened to all my translations, which is fair enough. I just don't think, as you say, I think it's very early for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not even sure how you would get in on the ground floor of something like that, other than just do it. But
yeah,
for now, I would focus on English.
Yeah. Mm. One of the biggest problems, of course, we've mentioned BookBub, you know, but that's difficult to get on. And for audiobooks, it's kind of even worse. Like right now, because we're in, I guess, early days, it's very hard to market audiobooks. So you have started Audiobook Blast. So first up, tell us about that.
So I went to BookBub and some of these other ones, and I said, hey, I'd like to promote my audiobook with you. And they said, no. So I said, fine, I'll do it myself. So I created audiobookblast.com, and it's a little different from BookBub, in that the current BookBub model doesn't really work with what I do. In other words, just flat out promoting your book doesn't work. What I do is I allow ACX authors to give away their 25 free codes to listeners who have said that they will listen and they will review the book. And that's really important, because getting reviews on Audible is the number one thing we've heard that you can do to get the attention of the merchandising team at Audible. That team is responsible for putting books in promotions like a buy one, get one free sale or summer reads or even, you know, just or the Audible daily deal. So the more reviews you can get, the more attention you're going to get. And if you in one of those promos, your sales will just go through the roof. It happens all the time. So that's what audiobookblast.com does, is we allow you an avenue of a way to give books to prospective reviewers. And right now we've got about 1,200-1,300 people on the list. Not too bad after a few months of starting up. So, yeah.
I think that's great. I mean, it's a really good start. And otherwise, author, like I just did, emailed my list and said, would anyone like to review the audiobook? But that, I mean, that really is kind of only one way. So do you have any other tips for marketing audiobooks?
Well, this goes back to what we said before about BookBub. Marketing your audiobook specifically is difficult because it's just a platform. That's kind of like saying, I'm going to market my Kobo version. You don't really do that, right? You market your book. You market your name as a, as an author, as a brand. Getting eyeballs to Amazon is the best way to sell your audiobook, because people who are interested in your book, if they're audiobook listeners, they will choose that as their preferred format, just like somebody would choose Kobo or Nook as opposed to the Kindle version. But Audiobook Blast is so cheap. It's $10 for a listing. And if you gift the book as opposed to just giving away the code, as of this writing, as they say, you actually get paid for those copies you give away. So if you give away 10 copies of your book, you're going to get paid for those 10 copies. You'll easily make out the $10 that you paid me to list it. And if you don't give away at least 5 copies, if there's just no interest, I'll give you your money back. So it's kind of, there's no reason not to drop a listing into Audiobook Blast. It essentially ends up being free. And I kind of hate to say that, because Audible could change the rules at any minute and say, no, we're not going to pay you for your free copies. But for my testing, you get paid for the copies that you gift away. So
yeah,
I can't imagine why you wouldn't do it.
No, and I think it's in all of our interests to build up ways that we can sell. And this type of aggregate platform is really good. I think, you know, so often we get so focused on just selling like our own books, we forget to build a bigger engine, I guess. And what you're building is an engine that will sell lots of audio over time, which is just fantastic. So yeah, definitely everyone should check that out.
And listeners, I need a lot more listeners too. I want BookBub's 2.5 million listeners.
Yeah, so if people like listening to audiobooks, they should also come and join the list as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then they can actually get some of those to listen to. That's awesome. They get it for free because they get a review code, right?
Yeah, it's free for the listener, just like BookBub and all these other ones. It's free for the listener. You just go to the website at audiobookblast.com and sign up as a listener. And every Tuesday, you'll get a blast with all the free audiobooks. We also promote WhisperSync deals. If you don't want to give any codes away, but you're giving your book away on permafree, for example, and the audiobook is $1.99, we'll promote that aspect of it for you. Because I mean, $1.99 for both, that's crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah. And I mean, I'm getting really, yeah, this is just amazing. What's so funny with, well, not funny, it's brilliant. Like you mentioned the income stream in the last, I'm just doing my tax for the 2014, 2015. So I'm doing my income. The year before, there was no audiobook income on my income statement. And this year, there's like a nice chunk of money. And you can see that next year, there'll be even more. And this is what I love about our business. You know, you get these new income streams just arriving, which is, just wow. But I wanted to ask you about the granularity of the Audible. You know, Audible's pretty bad at the moment, right? I mean, my books sit in mystery and thriller. That's just not granular. Do you know anything about them actually making that better, like Amazon?
Nope, I do not. it's
have you asked?
Well, Amazon owns Audible, and I've asked them specifically, hey, you going to do this? You going to do that? And they say, we're not allowed to comment on future features. They're like every other tech company. They can't comment on what they're going to be doing. So that's kind of a bummer, but from coming from the corporate world. Yeah, we keep asking. Yeah. And the best, I mean, if you want a feature, you keep saying, I want this feature. You keep poking at them and say it like this. And if enough people do it, they'll consider. Because I know that ACX still has a very active development team. What they're doing behind the scenes, I don't know. But they are very interested in our feedback because ACX is still a priority for them, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I think it's a growing one. Pretty much in London, every bus has Audible on it. And the underground, it's massive in London right now. They're really, really pushing audiobooks. It's huge.
So I wanted to also ask what you think of like putting the audio clip, because you're allowed to use 5 minutes, aren't you? Putting the audio clip on YouTube and or SoundCloud in terms of, you know, reaching people that way.
I think that's great, but I would not use the clip that Audible has on their website.
Right.
Because it's a very low quality sample and it's highly compressed and squashed and it sounds really yucky. So I just talk to your narrator and say, hey, can you send me a sample? I'd like to put it up on SoundCloud, and they'll send you a better sample than what Audible provides. But I think pushing the sample anywhere and everywhere you can is a fantastic idea. It's advertising, of course, absolutely. Let me caution one thing that I've seen authors do, which they do it in the best of, with the best of intentions, but it really kind of annoys people, is don't post auditions to your website.
Oh, no.
A lot of authors, well, we've seen this happen. Authors
really?
Will say, these six people auditioned for my book. You vote for which one you like. No, don't do that. That's shady. No.
Yeah. That's not very professional.
It's not professional. Mm-hmm. And I understand they're trying to build an interest in their book, and they don't mean to insult is not the right word, but they don't mean, this is not Gladiator. We're not putting we auditioned for you. It's not for public consumption. So that's a small caveat to the sample and the recordings. But once the book is done and you're in contract, absolutely push that sample everywhere, but make sure you get a good quality sample from the narrator.
Because both YouTube and SoundCloud have like really easy social media sharing buttons. So I would recommend, you know, people do that. And, you know, it's always on my list. And also they're much more easily embeddable on websites, the little SoundCloud clips. So I think that's a good idea. And just on that professional side, I've really learned, like, I think it's something you don't know until you do this, is that, you know, the audio is a adaptation. I mean, I know you read it, but you reading my words in One Day in New York, that's not me anymore. It really isn't. I listen to your voice and it's a man for a start, obviously, but you bring that American, you know, thing. And to me, it's like, but it's kind of a miracle to me to work with a creative professional to create a new version. You know what I mean?
I absolutely don't know what you mean, because that's another, the opposite of your attitude is a problem. It can be a problem working with authors, and it usually comes with authors who are not used to hearing their books in audio. The big complaint I hear from a narrator is that they say, I got an Excel spreadsheet with 500 lines of them directing me. So, you know, please go up at the end of this word, or I need more pause here, or that's not how I heard the voice of the character in my head. Authors need to get past that at this point. It's like going into a museum where there's some art. Everybody's going to have a different interpretation of that art. And the artist doesn't get to say, no, you're wrong, here's what it really means, or that, you know, that particular paint, brush, color, whatever means this, you're wrong. You're getting into the world of interpretation, and if you're hiring a creative professional, you've got to let them do their job and let them bring out their interpretation of your words. That's kind of the beauty of art in a way, in that you've created something that can be interpreted in different ways, and neither of them are wrong. They're just choices that the actor has to make.
And also what's super is you get people who follow the narrator. So I've had emails back saying, oh, you know, I'm so pleased because I love my book. You know, I love books by J.F. Penn and Jeffrey's my favorite narrator.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. So then, because you do a lot of action adventure, don't you? You do a lot of thrillers. Yeah. So people are like, people will buy an audio because of you, the narrator, not just the author, I guess.
I hope that's true.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is true. I think, I mean, because especially like this podcast, there are people who listen to this podcast because my voice, they like my voice.
Right.
You know, so same thing. People like to listen to you. I think it's amazing. I mean, I've thought, I did my own nonfiction and it was such hard work. You know,
oh, yes.
Really, really hard work. So, you know, full kudos for what you do. But anyway, I wanted to sort of talk briefly about the future. Like, what do you see? I mean, the big thing I see coming is Google Auto and Apple CarPlay coming in 2016 in every newly manufactured car, streaming audio, which to me is like will be a game changer. What do you see anything else coming in terms of audiobooks or where you see the future going or even the next year?
Well, streaming is really the big thing. Not necessarily streaming, but technological availability, such as AirPlay through your car, CarPlay, I guess they're calling
CarPlay,
it.
CarPlay, yeah.
Yeah. The ability to do Bluetooth from your smartphone to your car. I mean, I remember when it was amazing technology that I could plug in my phone with a cord into my car.
With a tape. With a tape, yeah, that exactly. Went in the tape deck.
Exactly. Or the little cassette deck.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Yeah. So the easier it becomes to listen to things, the easier it will be for people to absorb the content that we're creating. Now, of course, you're going to have, we have competition in things like Pandora and Spotify and the new Apple thing. And that's competition for your earballs, simply because you can't listen to music and an audiobook at the same time. So with this accessibility comes more competition. So we've got to be keep creating really compelling, professionally produced content.
So where can people find you and Audiobook Blast and all your books online?
Oh, well, they can just they can search my name on Audible. My website is my name, jeffreykafer.com. And audiobookblast.com is the new promotional endeavor. And that's it. Otherwise, you Google my name and I'm there. I'm everywhere.
You are everywhere. And and I highly recommend people check out. I'm going to have played the sample after this interview. So stick around to listen to a little clip from One Day in New York. So thanks so much for your time, Jeff. That was great.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me.
For all the hypervigilance of New Yorkers at the slightest possibility of terrorism, they embrace anything that could be construed as modern art. That's why no one reported a man constructing a strong wooden cross on the High Line that afternoon, next to a section that overlooked the Hudson River to the west. He was young and good-looking with an easy smile, his Mediterranean skin burnished by the late sun. He caught the attention of female joggers as they ran past, noting his strong, muscular arms as he sawed the wooden planks. There was a handwritten sign on a cardboard rectangle propped up near his workbench, "Performance Art in Progress." That was all the passersby needed to know, answering any questions that came to mind about his actions. Later that day, as workers began to stream out of the local offices on the commute home, an older man stopped for a moment. He looked down at the rough wood as the man fixed the cross piece, banging in long nails to hold the planks together.
"You've got that wrong, you know," the man said. "All evidence suggests that the cross Christ died upon would have been more like a T-shape."
The carpenter paused a moment. "The emphasis of this particular piece is more about emotional resonance than historical truth." He had a slight French accent, but in this city of diversity, that was not markedly unusual. The older man nodded slowly, rubbing his fingers across his beard before he moved on, just another walker enjoying the evening sun. The High Line was a disused railway track, raised above the streets of Lower West Side Manhattan and transformed into a boulevard of wild grasses, flower beds, and wooden seating, where bees buzzed and birds sang in the heart of the city. The views out across the city landscape and the wide river made it a tourist draw, as well as a haunt for local runners and walkers, desperate for a moment of peace above the throng. There were places on the High Line where nature had reclaimed a little corner of the metropolis, and those who craved escape came here to temporarily relieve the itch of the city. Buskers played along these sections, the sound of a jazz saxophone easing the evening into night,
And still the carpenter worked on, building a base to hold the cross steady when he raised it into the sky. When that was done, he fixed pieces of rubber tire onto the cross at jaunty angles, the black material lending an urban grittiness to the simple wooden frame, a dark foil for the sunset. As the night grew darker and the bars began to fill up below the high line, street food vendors set up stalls to cater to those who wanted dinner with their nature walk. Far more convenient than the wilderness any day, and just a stroll from Midtown. The carpenter bought a taco and watched people as they passed. His sign on the ground had gathered a few dollars over the day, perhaps a manifestation of guilt from the city elite for the artlessness of their own lives, briefly assuaged by paying another to be creative on their behalf, like doubting believers paying tithes on a Sunday. Several people had taken photos as he worked, and later those pictures would find their way into the papers. But the carpenter had no fear of discovery, for soon he would be heading back to the monastery, beyond the reach of the tentacles of this sinful city. He understood the necessity of what was to come, but he longed for peace and solitude. He looked at his watch. Only one more part of the structure remained to be built, a simple pulley mechanism that would help lift its weight so the cross could be drawn upright and seen from the city streets below. The carpenter turned back to his work, clearing his mind of the sounds of the sinners around him. When the relic was recovered, they would be screaming soon enough. After the final nail was hammered in, the carpenter sat in the dark, waiting, his breathing a calm meditation. As the clock neared 2 a.m., this area of the city was quieter. Most of the bars were closed, but of course, New York is the city that never sleeps. An audience could be guaranteed for their spectacle at any time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.